appreciate the comments that Brother George made regarding the text that he read. And the text itself doesn't really lend itself directly to the message that I plan to bring. But if you look at the first verse that Brother George read, the instruction is a call for us to walk in such a way that we are pleasing God. And among those things that are pleasing to God are God's people who avoid fornication, sexual immorality, who discipline their bodies not to give way to sensual lusts, who honor their marriage vows, not defrauding a married partner. And we please God when we show appropriate love toward all the brethren, which is stated farther on in the chapter in verses 9 and 10. But it's especially verse 1 that I had in mind, walking in a way that pleases God. And at the end of verse 1, it says we should be doing that more and more. And in verse 10, it says the same thing again, more and more. Our goal should be pleasing God. One of the areas related to the matter of pleasing God that's often neglected by many Christian groups, and that's why George's opening was very appropriate, is related to the matter of proper attire for God's people. And I plan to speak this morning a part of the doctrine of nonconformity, a message which I call your outward attire matters to God. Now, I preached on this same subject. I didn't use that same title, but the same major points, the first time in 1953. And then 20 years later, in 1973, I preached it again. And 20 years after that, in 1993, I preached it again. And now it's 20 years after that, and it's time to preach it again. I updated notes. The notes that I used in 1953 were less than a fourth the size of the pages I'm using now. But I can hardly read the words in our black hymn book anymore, and I had to use a magnifying glass when I tried to transfer my handwritten notes to larger notes that are typed into the computer. At any rate, the message is your outward attire matters to God. In Matthew 7, Jesus says that the Christian life involves walking on a narrow road. That means that there are restrictions beyond which we're not to go. There are boundaries. And one of the key points in the belief system of our Pietist Anabaptist forebears was the conviction that the New Testament scriptures are to be obeyed, even those portions that deal with the Christian's external appearance. Our dress sends a message. It says something about who we are. It says something about our personality. It says something about how we think. It says something about what standards are important to us. And make no mistake about it, our personal appearance is very important because we are actually changed by externals. When I was teaching school here in Spring Grove for 27 years, During most of those years, the administration designated certain days as special days. They had a slave day and a dress-up day and a mix-up day. And I really despised those days because on slave day, students wore the oldest, most tattered clothing they could find. On dress-up day, they wore the most, the finest clothing, the most fancy clothing they owned. On mix-up day, they had a black shoe in one foot and a brown shoe in another and a green sock on one leg and a red sock on another leg. You know, it was almost impossible to teach effectively on any of those days because those students were changed by their externals. And so are we. Appropriate outward appearance, according to the Word of God, for His people, involves at least five standards. One of those is that it should properly cover, our clothing should properly cover the nakedness of the body. Nudity is always condemned in the Bible. Modesty is always commended. When Moses went away into the mountain for many days and later came back to the camp and found people dancing in a nude fashion, God severely punished Israel because of the idolatry and the nakedness, Exodus 32, verse 28. In the New Testament, it was a demon-possessed man who didn't wear any clothes. In Luke chapter 8, verse 27, and in 1 Timothy 2:9, Christian women are to wear modest apparel. Surely men are included in the mandate because they have a leadership responsibility. Modest apparel includes clothing that covers the body instead of advertising it. The word modesty means to be free of anything that's suggestive of sexual impurity. Women who love the Lord do not wear outfits that display every curve of the body. And by the way, high heels not only make a woman look taller and thinner, but also they make her look sexier and curvier. And they throw your back out of line all at the same time. Men and boys are pretty good at telling whether or not you're advertising your body, whether it's for sale. And of course, we men have a tremendous responsibility to guard our eyes. And it's one of the difficulties every red-blooded human male faces. At the same time, that's our responsibility to guard our eyes. But to the women, if your body's not for sale, keep it off the display counter. Don't advertise it. Dresses should easily cover the knees when standing and sitting. They should have some kind of sleeves and proper necklines. They should be made to fit without giving prominence to the bodily form. The wearing of shorts, tight-fitting, body-hugging garments, dresses, blouses that reveal the woman's cleavage, or that uncover the thigh, as the prophet Isaiah says, all these are despicable in the eyes of God. Well, principle number one, our outward attire should properly cover the nakedness of the body. Number two, our clothing should distinguish between the sexes. Deuteronomy 22:5 talks about a man wearing a woman's clothes and a woman wearing a man's garment. God says there it is an abomination. True, the instruction that I just referred to is part of the Old Testament law, But it's also true that the New Testament does not condone those things which God in the Old Testament says are an abomination. In the New Testament, the fundamental difference between a man and a woman is to be specified in the way men and women wear their hair. 1 Corinthians 11:14-15 says it. Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man wears long hair or has long hair, it's a dishonor to him, it's a shame to him. But if a woman has long hair, it is a glory to her. The major concern in that part of 1 Corinthians 11 is that there should be an obvious difference of appearance between a man and a woman. A person's hair serves as a visible symbol of one's submission to God's order of authority and serves as a distinguishing mark between a man and a woman. And so, in light of these principles, it's really best and proper that women should not wear pantsuits and slacks and jeans and trousers unless they're worn under a dress for certain kinds of work on the farm or maybe in the garden. Even the public restroom doors, fortunately, use the symbol generally of a man with long pants and the outline of a woman with a skirt. I've traveled in 52 countries outside the United States. Many times I didn't know the word for man or woman, and when using a restroom, it would really have been embarrassing had there not been this common symbol, a man in long pants, and the women's restroom, the symbol of a woman with a skirt. Now, look up here. Look me in the eye. Both the Bible and simple common sense, both the Bible and our intuitive natures say that it's wrong for men and women to dress alike. One of your preachers came to the service here next Sunday wearing a dress, and he carried a purse, and he walked behind his pulpit. And he said, "Folks, I intend to dress like this. This isn't a joke. This is the way I'm going to dress from now on." How would you react? All I'm saying is that intuitively, an inborn common sense, you would recognize if you have anything left in your mind to think with, that there's something wrong with that kind of action. God expects our attire to distinguish between male and female. The third principle, our attire should forego costly ornamentation. God in the New Testament speaks about and speaks clearly against the wearing of gold and pearls and costly array in 1 Timothy 2:9. The Bible always condemns pride and display and extravagance. In the scriptures, you can read a number of examples where people appeared outwardly showing ornamentation, pride, display with the things that they wore. The scriptures speak derisively of haughty women in Isaiah 3, beginning at verse 16, of stiff-necked people in Exodus 33, verse 5, of a proud king in Acts 12, verse 21. They speak of spoiled girls in Jeremiah 4, beginning at verse 30. The scriptures speak of a hypocritical priest in Matthew 3, beginning at verse 5. I chose those five scriptures, which you can jot down, listen to the tape if you didn't catch them all. You check them out, you'll find that all of those characteristics, being stiff-necked and proud and spoiled and hypocritical, they're all connected with the way those people dressed. By way of contrast, the Bible commends humility and simplicity and economy in adornment. Worldly people clutter their bodies with many items of adornment which serve no useful purpose. Today it's nose rings and earrings and glass rings and belly button rings and toe rings and tattoos of the most gross kind. Early brethren forbade the wearing of rings because of what the scriptures say about gold and pearls and costly array, and because they knew that the ring was really the first step that would open the door to the wearing of all kinds of jewelry. And tattoos, of course, are flatly prohibited because scripture relates them as a mark of Satanism and of paganism. Even the wedding band was prohibited and is prohibited by those who are concerned about obeying the scriptures. The wedding ring is a symbol. It's an endless circle. It symbolizes an unending faithfulness between the giver and the receiver. And I wish that symbol were as powerful as people think it is. There's no power in it. The percentage of marriages that go on the rocks, the percentage of marriages that go on the rocks is much greater among those who wear a wedding band than is the percentage of those who, out of loyalty to God, choose not to wear the ring. So God's people, number one, dress in such a way that clothing covers the nudity of the body. Number two, they wear clothing that distinguishes between male and female. Number three, they avoid that which is mere ornamentation and show. Number four, we should avoid following the changing fads. One of the key practical Bible passages on the Christian life is Romans 12, 1 and 2. That would be the passage we would likely read, especially verse 2, "Be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind," and so forth. The Greek structure of that sentence in verse 2 actually implies that we're not to follow the world's standards even in that which is outward and visible. The word is schema, and it's a word that refers to our thinking, our goals, our values, but also to our outward behavior and the customs of this world. The today's English version translation of Romans 12:2 is the best, most accurate translation of the simple text, Romans 12, verse 2, in the today's English version, clearly says, and this is it, "Do not conform outwardly to the standards of this world." That's reading it very literally from the original language. It means, among other things, that our outward appearance must not be noticeably affected by the constantly changing dress styles of fashionable people who circulate in our society. I can't keep up with all the fads. I don't know the names of all the different garments. What I would have named in 1953 and in 1973 and 1993 would be different from today, I suppose. But I do know this, that fashion slavery is a sign of a worldly, people-pleasing heart. And I also know that it will be these kinds of people who are caught up with fashion slavery who are going to give way easily and fall for the Antichrist when he rules for a brief time as we come into the end time events. God doesn't expect your clothing to look like the front page of the latest fashion magazine. God's people avoid following the changing fads. We're not to let the world, as Phillips translates Romans 12, to squeeze us into its own mold. The plain clothes that mark the appearance of committed Mennonite brethren, Quakers, some Quaker people who are followers of Jesus, are a reminder of the Bible teaching about coming out from the world and being separate. The various forms of distinctive clothes are a protest against the vain forms of dress in the world about us. They are an emblem of purity and integrity. Many people have trusted and favored those who wore a distinctive garment, distinctive Christian, maintained a distinctive Christian appearance, simplicity, humility, economy. Back in the days when Priscilla and I were still taking groups to the Holy Land, we came into the John F. Kennedy Airport in New York City one afternoon, returning from the land of Israel, when at the same time there were two 747 Boeing jet planes landed, each having about 400 people. And so in the building, the customs area, there were 800 people milling around, wanting their luggage gone through and searched and ready to move on. And it was a real hassle that afternoon. And all of a sudden, I heard a customs officer call out for the leader of the group that had just returned from Tel Aviv in Israel. And I raised my hand and shouted to the officer. He said, "Bring your group over here. Near that door far ahead." And he said, "If anyone has purchases that need to be declared, that is for customs duties, you bought things for which you need to pay tax," he says, "have them pay their dues and then move out in that hallway." And before leaving that big room where there were those 800 people anxious to get out of there, I said to the customs officer, "Thank you, thank you, thank you for allowing us to leave so quickly. We have a bus waiting on the other side of the door." And he said, "I never saw such a trustworthy, reputable looking people in all my life." That was it. We left, took our bus back to York County. The worst thing that happens sometimes when statements like that are made is that there might be an individual here or there among us who is a bad example. Don't be a bad example for the people who are living a life that's dedicated to God by daring to be different. Number five, our clothing should be neat and tidy. The scripture in 1 Timothy 2, verse 9 says that we should adorn ourselves in modest apparel with shamefacedness and sobriety. The word sobriety is a word that literally means to be in harmony with good taste. God's people wear clothing in public settings, should wear clothing in public settings that's neat and tidy, in harmony with good taste. There's no virtue in being careless or sloppy. in one's appearance, a dress or a suit that's clean, carefully fitted, neatly pressed, adds strength to the testimony of a holy life. When we talk about modesty and distinctiveness and separation between the sexes, we're not implying carelessness in our appearance. A tidy appearance adds dignity to the profession of godliness. The Lord expects us to dress with sobriety in harmony with good taste. And especially when we come to the house of God, we're coming to worship the King. And every culture has good clothes, the kind you wear to a wedding or a funeral, or if you're asked to sing before the Queen. They also have work clothes that are not always clean and tidy. The person who comes to church, as I saw some recently, boys with their shirt tails hanging out the back, or with jeans that are already got holes in them, is really like a Pharisee of New Testament times who wore phylacteries and large borders to kind of send a message about their unique and strange ways in Matthew 23, verse 5. Well, these have been principles related to the matter of outward adornment. Number one, clothing should properly cover the nakedness of the body. Number two, it should distinguish between the sexes. Number three, it should avoid gold, pearls, useless ornamentation. Number four, it should avoid following mere changing fads. And number five, it should include keeping garments neat and tidy. And I remind all of us that outward appearance cannot be a valid substitute for inward godliness. Watch that. Outward appearance is one way, just one way, we can let an unspoken witness to the transforming power of Christ in our lives. But I remind us too that advocating modesty and simplicity in dress does not mean that we are defending salvation by the good things that we do, by good works. We're not doing that. Wearing proper dress is not a meritorious work that earns salvation. It doesn't win brownie points with God, but it is a proper response to the saving grace of God that I hope all of us have embraced and believed. To think that we can earn God's salvation by adhering to a dress code is a great, great mistake. But to accept the grace of God to save us and then to ignore the Bible's commandments about outward attire, that is a discredit to God's mercy, and we don't want to do that. As I view Christianity today, and I'm thinking especially of the kind of thing that Brother George mentioned in the OnStar, as I view Christianity today, I'm convinced that there's going to be some pretty sobering dress accounts to give on the day of judgment. It may include some of us. You have to check your own heart and life. How we dress matters to God. It should matter to us.